Welcome to the 2023 Virtual Region Convention and to our keynote session. I am going to introduce the keynote speaker. She will speak for 30 minutes, and then we will have a Q&A session for 20 minutes. Linda is our keynote speaker. Take it away, Linda.
Hi, everybody. My name is Linda. I'm a compulsive eater and a food addict. I'll give you some of my stats. I'm 75 years old. I arrived here 41 years ago at the age of 34. I'm the eldest of five children, and I weighed over 300 pounds. I really became a compulsive overeater where I could not stop eating and I could not diet at about the age of 27. I had married an alcoholic. The marriage was not good, and neither of us were in recovery, and I had two small children, and I struck out on my own, and everything was good until about the age of 32, and then all of a sudden, I started, and I could not stop eating. I would, as soon as my feet hit the floor in the morning, I would eat and continue until I went to bed at night. I was at a house party, and my superintendent suggested going to Overeaters Anonymous, and I drove. She did not. I offered to take her if she found the meeting. She showed up at my work the next day, and she had the information, and we started the following week. When I came to Overeaters Anonymous, it was a Monday, and the following week was a Tuesday. We came to the meeting, and there were 40 people there. It was 1982. There was, in my country, no drive-throughs, not very much in the way of fast foods. Grocery stores were open till 9 p.m. on Friday evening. They were open till 6 p.m. on Saturday evening and closed on Sunday. So most of my food was purchased at the grocery store, with the premise that it was for my children, although they never saw it. There were times when I was so engrossed in my food that I did not hear or see my children or pay attention to where they were. I was very fortunate that they did not, nothing bad happened. So I came to OA, and I started to help right away. So my most important tool has been service. I helped set the chairs up. I helped put the literature out, but I refused to speak to anyone. I actually looked at everybody. I sat at the back of the room, and I thought everybody was really kind of crazy. They looked all happy. They were talking to one another, and none of them really knew each other other than at the meeting, but they were very interactive with one another, and I did not know how to do that. But I came back the next week and the next week. I did attend a new members meeting, and it was suggested that I have three meals a day, nothing in between, and do one day at a time. I did definitely eliminate white from my plan of eating, but other than that, I would have three planned meals a day. When I came to OA that 41 years ago, it was recommended that we call in our food to our sponsor for 21 days. So I didn't get a sponsor right away. My very first sponsor, I was picking literature up from her home for the meeting, and I asked her if she, 6 weeks later, I asked her if she would be my sponsor. She said yes, and then I did not call her at all. It took me 3 weeks to get up the courage to call her. Finally, when I did, I would call my food in, and it took 30 seconds. I planned it out. I used that to buy my groceries with, and I became my, that was the beginning of my having financial security, because I wasn't spending all of my money on food. I was spending on the groceries and had money for clothing for my children and other needs. She was so kind to me. After the 30 seconds, she said to me, "How was your day? How is everything going? And I came in an era, I was divorced, and I came in an era where if you were a divorced woman, you were frowned on. My mother was upset with me, and so therefore, although she cared, she couldn't express it because she was very, very worried. So my sponsor she was my age now, 75, and she became like a surrogate mother to me. And she was so kind. And we proceeded to go through everything, and I had a lot of physical recovery. However, I didn't work the steps. I knew I was powerless over food, but I had issues with God and being willing to turn everything to a power greater than myself. I started speaking because I had such good physical recovery. I started speaking at meetings and conventions, and it was one of the things that I hesitate to do as much now because it was the beginning of my downfall. I did not go to step studies. I did try to understand about a power greater than myself because I was having issues with anger with my ex-husband, and she had me pray for him for peace, happiness, and prosperity for 14 days. And I actually did that, and I told God that I didn't mean a word I said, but my sponsor told me to do this. At the end of 2 weeks, the gift was I wasn't as angry. I wasn't resentful, and I wasn't angry in the same sense as I was before. I still had work to do. Because I wasn't working the steps, I picked up. I had a 14-year-old daughter at that time, and she became a rebel without a cause. I became a grandmother when she was at 39. And I was trying everything to fix it. I couldn't fix anything. So I did not get abstinent until 1992. And I have been physically abstinent for 31 years since February 28, 1992. I got a sponsor after 10 years because my sponsor had to leave the program. And I looked around my meeting room, and it was in an era where all we had were the people in the meeting room, and I didn't want to trust anybody. So in my world, I sponsored myself, and that is not a good choice. It was a recipe for disaster. I regained all of my weight and more. So at that stage, in February 1992, I was offered a dessert. I was working late, and I threw it in the garbage, and that was the beginning of my recovery. My new sponsor insisted I attend a step study, and I attended my regular meeting and a step study, and I started understanding how powerless I was over food. My life was really unmanageable. I couldn't control even myself at one point, but I could have 3 meals a day, whatever I wanted on one plate, and nothing in between. I took many opportunities to go to retreats, to conventions, to special events, to special focus events, because I was trying to find my way and learn to be who I was supposed to be. I live in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, about an hour and a quarter west and north of Toronto, Ontario. And I was given the opportunity to work in Toronto. And that was where I started to be an independent person. My children were grown at this stage, and I was on my own, and I was on a new journey. I learned many, many things, but the thing that I learned the most was I had to go to meetings. I started working a lot of extra time, And I stopped attending meetings, and it showed in my willingness to change and grow. I realized what was going on, and I started getting back to meetings. But one of the biggest things for me throughout this whole time has been doing service. I would chair meetings. I would help set up meetings. I would take on service that other people weren't willing to do. And I became at one point the secretary for my intergroup. And that job taught me, got a computer, and that particular job taught me how to do word processing. I started to get interested in that type of skill, and that was how I ended up working out of Toronto, because in that time frame, computers were just becoming, it was 1992, and computers were just becoming something that everybody was really, really into. And that gave me a skill set that allowed me to go to a promotion to do a different job. And that is one of the things that I always say to people, do service. You never know what you're going to learn. And the other thing I learned is how to work with others. I am a person who doesn't interact well with anyone. And learning to work with my fellow coworkers was how I learned was working with others in OA. I had to learn to accept people as they were. Throughout this whole process, I was also developing a plan of eating that worked for me. I have done special plans of eating, but they really never worked. I had to, they talk about a red light, a yellow light, and a green light list of foods. I never learned that until I was in OA for 25 years, but I had in the end developed it myself, because that would mean that anything that was red, that's stop. And that means don't eat that food, because it would trigger a binge that I wouldn't be able to get myself out of. And I also learned by elimination. So in the process of eliminating foods, I realized that there were things, behaviors around food that I had. And one of them, in the very beginning in 1991, I drank coffee with cream at work, and I had a coffee fund. This is an example of the way it was before. So I had anywhere from 10 to 15 cups of coffee a day with cream. I had to let that go, and that was the first thing I let go willingly. Now, I thought when I did that, I would lose weight right away. That doesn't happen, because it was just one thing, and that wasn't the purpose of letting it go. The purpose of letting it go was the cream, I had to be willing to do that. It didn't mean I could never have it again, but I had to be willing to do it, because the cream was the reason I was drinking the coffee. But I also had to make a living amends, because that was a coffee fund that I belonged to, but I was drinking more than my fair share. So I stayed contributing to the coffee fund for almost a year so that I could pay them back what I owed them. What I did allow myself was 3 cups of tea per day, morning, lunch, and supper. So breakfast, lunch, and supper, I could have a cup of tea, just regular tea, nothing special. And that was the journey I went on to eliminate the foods so that I could have an abstinent, could have a food plan I could live with, and I could be abstinent. Then I would go to retreats, and they were places that I could learn how to best support myself. I had to have a power greater than myself. And when you weren't exactly sure that you could do this, the power greater than myself, I actually realized at one retreat that that's what I was trying to be. I was my own higher power. That doesn't work, because honestly, that meant that I was trying to control everything in my life. The next thing I learned was that I had to be willing to trust, and that's step three. So the willingness was something that did not come easily. But I did continue on. Then I had to be willing to exercise. And exercising for me, I didn't like it. So I started walking, and walking was my exercise of choice. I did join a gym at one point, but in the end, walking was the one that gave me the most peace and serenity, because at that point I could communicate with my higher power. There was a tool that I also used too, which was literature, and there's a pamphlet called Just for Today. And my favorite part of this was, just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as good as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself. And this was really, really important to me because I didn't love myself. I didn't care how I looked. So the first thing I started to do was dress up in this abstinence, dress up when I went to meetings. I, even if I had just put on a fresh top, quickly ate a meal. If I spilled food on myself, I had to change. I had to go to meetings and I had to go to meetings looking good so that that for me made me feel better. Another thing that I have done is my seventh tradition, service as well as financial. Seventh tradition for me was very imperative because I was a single person, and I was really worried about what the future held for me financially. So when I put my seventh in the basket as it went round, I lost the fear of the future. That did not mean that I did not plan for the future, but it meant that I had to trust, not hold back and not put money in the basket, but put the money in the basket and trust my higher power that everything would be okay. Those two things and my abstinence were the beginning of my understanding that God could do for me what I could not do for myself. I went to Toronto. I ended up moving in the vicinity and 2 years later moved back. And when I returned to Waterloo, the meetings had all left. And there was only one, and it was so hard to find. I helped everybody, and everybody was part of it, but we had to work together to find something because it's really important to have meetings. And then I was helping the meeting get started, and I did all kinds of different service at my meeting, but I didn't do anything above the meeting because I was still traveling into the city. And then as time progressed, I had the opportunity to work from home. And with that opportunity came the opportunity then to go to my intergroup and do service there. And at this point, I had done something when I first came back, which there was no way of me knowing who I had done it to, but I had been very difficult to deal with because they had made a change at World Service for the meeting I was a member of and the contact for, and they put my home address in. And I was very upset that she had done that, and I was not very happy about it. And I expressed myself quite vocally. So when I went to intergroup, I took on the service of updating the meetings at World Service and managing the meeting list. And that was a living amends, but it also was a lesson for me. I made a similar mistake for another member. And I saw how easy it was to do, and I have no idea who I spoke to. All I could do was continue the journey. After a few years of doing that, I became the Region 6 representative. And I went to Region 6 as a representative, helping with the business of OA. And this was a big requirement because there was no way that I could ever consider breaking my abstinence. I had sponsees, I had a sponsor, and I had service. And all of that required that I remain abstinent. So I continued on. And then after 4 years, I became the recording secretary at Region 6. And after 2 years, I am now the chair of my intergroup. And I'll finish that off at November. It's a very hard job. So you can hear when I share my journey, I would not have stayed in this program if I had not done service. I came into OA angry with the world. I didn't really care if I lived or died. I at one point made a deal, I thought, with my higher power to say, let me raise my children and then I don't care if I'm alive. I care if I'm alive today. OA saved my life. I was able to make living amends to my parents for being a teenager and being difficult to deal with. I have 2 children and a daughter-in-law, adults, that I speak to and get along with. I have 6 grandchildren that I love dearly that come to visit me and speak with me. And I have 2 great-granddaughters and a great-grandson on the way. All of these people think I'm okay, but I wouldn't be if I wasn't in OA. I have learned a lot on this journey. I have also come into OA at the age of 34, behaving emotionally as if I was a 15-year-old teenager, taking temper tantrums, getting upset with people. That I think I'm getting to be an adult now. I also learned to speak up for myself, and I learned that sometimes I have good ideas, but not all of them are good. Sometimes my ideas were accepted at a group meeting or an intergroup, and sometimes they weren't. It really depended on the idea and if the rest of the membership thought it was a good idea. But I learned that it isn't personal. It's what people hear and what they think is the good path to go. All of these things and more came from going to a 12-step program for compulsive eating and food addiction, which I have. I go to meetings weekly, 2 each week or more. I sponsor and I am sponsored. I have quiet time with my higher power in the morning. I do prayer and meditation, and I read and I write. Writing was very hard for me to accept. My third last sponsor chaired a meeting and brought books and pens to the meeting. It was in person for everyone and asked us all to go home and write out 3 gratitudes. That was the beginning of writing for me. I was around 60. So I write out multiple gratitudes daily. I have done service at the virtual region, and I had to give that service up recently because I have issues with my health and shoulders. And the people that took on the service have done an amazing job, and I am grateful for the opportunity to have served the virtual region in that fashion and help everything grow and change. All of these things are important. We are all special people. All of us bring something special to the table, and nothing is irrelevant. We need to serve OA. We need to be of service to our fellows and to our families where possible and friends. I am by nature selfish and self-centered and self-willed. This program has changed my life forever. And I am grateful to be part of this program. Just so you know, I'm maintaining approximately 110-pound weight loss for about 10 years. And I am so grateful for that gift. I could not be, I would not be here and alive if I had not come to this fellowship. And I would not have the relationship with the people that I know today if it weren't for Overeaters Anonymous. I urge all of you to look at what you're able to do and take on service where you can. It doesn't have to be big, but it is a true gift. And everybody is wonderful in what they do, and you're all amazingly beautiful people. So please keep coming back to meetings, and please, and thank you for the opportunity to do this service, and please enjoy the rest of the convention. And on that, I'm done. Oh, I forgot one thing, the responsibility pledge, and this is very important. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. This is the OA Responsible Pledge, and it's very, very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. So we will now open the floor for a question and answer session. First question I have is, what do you mean by abstinence?
Abstinence for me is that I abstain from compulsively overeating. I plan my meals and I buy my food accordingly. I do not eat in front of the television. I have to do things like make my bed in the morning, take time with my higher power, read as often as possible the daily reading, and offer to help serve at an OA meeting. My food plan is how I maintain that abstinence. If I can't do something, I also have to let it go and move on, which is what I have done with some of my service. And it turns out that that was the best thing that happened to me. But abstinence is really, really important. If I am binging and purging, as I was a laxative bulimic as well, then I don't do what I have committed to do, and I don't take care of my personal hygiene or my home or bother with anybody. I would just sit in the house and eat. I hope that helps.
Thank you. Another question. What specific thing keeps you motivated when you don't feel like it?
Mine is my commitment to the fellowship. When I retired, I had made a promise to myself that I was going to do more service for OA, and that is all I have done. I did a little stint at my grandchildren's public school until COVID hit, and then after that, I don't. All I do is OA service, and no matter what it is, I make a commitment. When I make a commitment, I follow through. And usually what happens is I'm good. That gets me back into where I need to be to continue on. And the other is a slogan, act as if. So if I don't want to do it, I act as if I do. I did run into a big problem in January. I could not raise my arms over my shoulders. And I was non-functioning, basically. And that was the hardest thing I ever had to go through in the last few years. And I continually got to meetings. I also did readings. And I could do some computer and some writing. And eventually, I persevered. And now I can raise my arms over my head.
Another question is, how has your food plan evolved over the years?
Well, the first thing that happened is that I can't eat what I used to eat when I was young. That's the very first thing. But I have come to a place of acceptance where the food that I choose to eat is the food that I need to fuel my body. I don't crave sugar. In the fashion that I had, I don't crave sugar at all, and I don't eat refined sugar products. I won't say that I never use sugar because that would not be honest, but I make my own items if they have sugar in them. Currently, not right now because I can't make my arms work, so I don't miss it. So I basically have chosen to leave white flour out of my food plan for the most part. And I have a vegetables, fruit, protein, and grain as my plan of eating. And breakfast, lunch, and supper. At this stage, thankfully, I don't have to have snacks, and I don't eat at night, and I don't want to.
Right.
The next question, do you struggle with body image issues?
Definitely. And I've always struggled with them, but it's worse today because of all that happened to me starting about September last year, I am so misshapen, I'm embarrassed. But nothing has changed on the scale, just my body just changed. Everything sort of fell. And I think it's 75, everything falls down anyway, so it's all good. I have learned to look at myself and say, I love myself. I may not like the body part that I'm looking at that point in time, but it's temporary. Higher power has a plan, and his plan is for me to get better so I continue on with a longer life. And if part of that means that for a period of time I'm misshapen, I must accept that. But body image was with me from as far back as 8 or 9, I can remember, because I was a different shape of a child. I wasn't skinny, but when I look at my pictures, I was just one of those stocky kids that needed to grow. But I came from an era where many people thought children were overweight, and they meant well, but it didn't help my body image. And, of course, going through puberty didn't help either. So body image is an ongoing issue with me that I work each day. I know I have a good body image when I look at everybody and I see them as beautiful. If I see people in a negative way, I have to look internally and do some work on myself with my program.
Thank you. The next one is, what kind of support do you personally have in OA and out of the rooms?
I have a sponsor. I have friends in OA. I have sponsees. Now, my personal support is my sponsor, who I connect with once a week on the phone. She lives in Pennsylvania, and I can send her emails. I also, my family is aware. I have no issues. I tell everybody about my involvement in a 12-step program. I am not necessarily vocal in extending all of that information, but I do not hold back. I am not ashamed. I have a disease, and I take the support where I can. And often it's picking up the phone and talking to somebody, or it's reading, or it's sitting down and I'm having an issue and I sit there and talk to my higher power, and then all of a sudden an intuitive voice speaks to me to say, well, what if you try it this way? Or what if you do this? It's interesting how that evolves.
Thank you. The next one is, what was your most challenging step that you've experienced?
Wow. They were, the fourth step at the very beginning was the most challenging. And in particular, I had to do a fourth step on my part in the dissolution of my marriage. And given that it was a very bad place to be and very abusive relationship, to accept any responsibility was more than I wanted to do. However, I did my fourth step on that, and I was able to let things go. And some, also the other challenging step today is remembering to do a 10th step, looking at my day and reflecting to see if I need to make an amends. And the greatest gift I got from the pandemic is because I didn't interact with anybody, I was locked down half of the time, I didn't have any amends to make. because I didn't see anybody. But I think everyone is different, and making amends can be difficult. But I knew that if I didn't do the work, I was going to go back to the life I had before, and I didn't want that.
Right. Thank you. What is your least liked tool, and how do you go about doing it anyway?
The least liked tool at the beginning was writing, and then my sponsor at the time gave us all this book, and I started writing, and I got the value of that. And then the telephone. So the telephone, when I first was in OA, I used it all the time. I remember going to the fridge once, and a phone call as I was walking by came in. I picked up the phone. 20 minutes later, I forgot what I was going to the fridge. 20 minutes later, after the phone call with an OA member, I basically forgot what I was doing and went on about my day. So now I have to work at it more. I will text an awful lot of the time, which is helpful for me, but sometimes hearing that voice is very important. But I have to do it at some point.
Okay. Can you describe your relationship with your higher power?
So my higher power is not a religious power, a religious higher power. I do belong to a religious organization, but spirituality to me comes from within. I know that people that are extremely religious may disagree, but in my personal belief, my higher power loves me, cares about me, and protects me. He will never punish me and does not despise or hate me or criticize me. And when I was in religious, at some points of my religious upbringing, it was pointed out that God would punish us. And I really had no interest. So my God is my friend, my counsel, someone I can trust to stop me from doing things that could hurt me. And one of them really was years ago when I worked in Toronto. I was stuck in my head, and I had an intuitive voice to look up. And the hand, I was at a street crossing that a bus just went by. And I just about got wiped out by a GO bus. It's GO Transit in Ontario. And that was a real lesson for me to trust those intuitive thoughts. Those intuitive thoughts come from my higher power.
The next one is, can you give an example of a relationship that you've had that the steps and being in program have changed and transformed that relationship?
My own mother. My mother and I argued. It turns out that she was worried about me because I never remarried and had two young kids to look after, but we were always at loggerheads. And I remember coming back from a retreat and explaining OA to her. I had her attention for about 10 minutes, but I talked for an hour and she was just listening, but she wasn't really hearing me. But as time progressed, I changed. My mother never changed. She was always the same, but we could talk to one another. And my mother she's not here anymore. She was a British woman, and English people, particularly from her era, they didn't share their feelings or their thoughts or offer much. So it was very hard for us to communicate. But in the end, we did. And I was one of two primary caregivers in the last 2.5 years of her life. And I had no resentment and no anger and no animosity. Just before she passed away, I was looking into how I could take time off work to look after her, and then I didn't have to do that. But we were very close, and she was very kind to me over the years, and that would never have happened because I lied to her when I was 19 and said I was doing something I wasn't doing in an era where females didn't do that kind of stuff. And both my parents trusted me in the end, and I didn't think they ever would.
Thank you. We have another question. When you hope so strongly that a friend will accept OA, but they don't, what are your tools for letting them go?
Actually, that is a very difficult question because it depends an awful lot on the relationship. I have actually let them go in that I had a sponsee and she and I were friends, and she didn't like the fact that she was a compulsive eater, and she left the fellowship, and I had to stop connecting with her because she herself was uncomfortable and didn't want to speak with me. And then she came back, and we were not the same type of friends again, which was okay because we were still friends. Then she left again and she came back. So I told her she'd had two vacations, because that's how I looked at it. But you just have to, somehow it hurt. It hurt so bad. And I will tell you that at the first round, it was a very codependent relationship. We were embroiled in each other's life. My aunt used to say, in your hip pocket. We were sort of like that. And that was the hardest thing I ever had to do. But I reached out to her several times and she didn't call me back. And it was trusting that she would come back. And she did. In the end, she did. And she's still an OA member. But it was very, very difficult. And it's emotional. But I had a sponsee that once told me, feelings have an IQ of 0. And they are not a command. And I don't have to act on them. So that was how I got through it, was a former sponsee telling me, they have no IQ, just... if you continue to persevere, you will get to the end.
Thank you. What do you do on a daily basis to maintain your fit spiritual condition?
I actually do my readings, my writing. So I read daily from Voices of Recovery and For Today. I also read Acceptance. I believe it's page 419. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, fourth edition. And I write and I sit for 10 minutes or more, or even less, depending on the day and what's happening, and just listen to what's going on outside. Even in the winter, I can hear traffic. I can hear things, birds. I can hear all kinds of different things, and just listen and hear. And it sets the tone for how my day is going to be.
Great. And next, what would you say to someone that is struggling or who's a chronic relapser?
I would say to persevere. So and somebody's going to say, well, what's that? Well, that means just keep putting one foot in front of the other each day. And I remember when I started, when I moved back to Kitchener-Waterloo and I was commuting 2 hours each way, 4 hours a day, and I carried my lunch and my supper with me. And because I couldn't eat, I didn't get home till 7:45. And if I ate at night at that hour, I wouldn't be sleeping much. And I had to get up again at 5 a.m. And I was walking home from the train station, and I realized I was really, really, really angry about having to carry those two meals with me. But they were planned meals, and I had to do it. Because, number one, I had to do it because I needed that clean food. Number two, I couldn't afford to eat out. 1 year later, I realized the anger had gone. I just kept on. It is so hard to do, to trust that it's all going to work out, but it does. And the same thing happened with my shoulders. The whole month of January, I could barely move. And I just kept on. And I had one other thing that I had to do, it helped reduce the inflammation. I've got a severe arthritis attack in both shoulders. And I got some relief, and I was able to do the physio, and then I was able to do the other things that I needed to do. And now I actually was struggling walking for a bit too because my hips were impacted. And the next thing you know, I can walk. I look funny when I get up, but I can walk and I can take care of myself. But I had to keep on keeping on. And I had to accept that that's just the way it was going to be. And acceptance is the thing. Food is not my God. So the food is not important, although there were times when I thought it was.
If you can't get abstinent, does it mean that you were trying too hard? How do you just wait for HP to remove the obsession from you?
So when I got abstinent in 1992, I couldn't figure out why I couldn't get abstinent. Like, I was trying so hard in that was in November of 1991. And then one day I was sitting thinking about this and I realized what I wanted was what I had the first day I walked into OA. I had pink cloud abstinence. I had a euphoric feeling. It was so wonderful to put down food and have a life. That was the thing that happened when I put down the food. I actually had a life. And I could do things other than eat. And when I realized that I wanted that back, but it was the pink cloud is like the honeymoon. If you are married to the same person, then you don't really get the honeymoon that you had the first time. It's the same thing with OA. I don't really get the OA honeymoon I had the first time, but I get something different. I have life experience behind me and I can start to work the program. But you have to keep trying. There's higher power will get you there. If you ask each day for the willingness, he'll give it to you.
Right. Okay, you know, what would you say to a person who cannot sustain their abstinence for more than 1 week?
Well, I have a sponsee like that, and I basically don't say anything to her, but suggest that, have you noticed that the week that you didn't go to any meetings, you struggled with food? That kind of thing? Because it's really important to accept them where they are and encourage them. She's a wonderful person. She's not willing to do step three. That's what it is. And honestly, I don't know what you can do because people only hear it when they're ready to hear it.
And probably the last question, unfortunately, but can you say more on your higher power and how you came to develop your vision and experience of your higher power?
It was a gradual process. The first thing I learned was that when I asked for peace, happiness, and prosperity from my ex-husband, it actually removed the anger. But I also had to learn to trust my higher power. So it's a slow, slow journey. I went to retreats. I went to one-day events. And I always went to the meditation sessions because I couldn't meditate. I didn't know what meditation was, and I thought there had to be a perfect way to do it, and there is not a perfect way to do it. My brain would start to spin. It just takes time, but trust. And if you ask for something and you don't get it, always remember that higher power is either saying no, not now, or no. Most of the time for me, it was no, not now. At my job, I was trying very hard to get a promotion, but I was being held back. It didn't matter why. And a new person manager came in, and I got a job at my company. It was a bank that was the best job I ever had. Well, one of the best jobs I ever had at the new branch I went to work to. If I had gotten any of the other jobs that I had tried to get, I would never have gotten that job. Hindsight, I could see it. At the time, I had trouble. So I learned over time, no, not now, or no, no for that one. And it does work.
Thank you. I'm afraid we've come to the end of our session. So thank you to everyone who attended this webinar. Thank you to our speaker, Linda, and all those who have done service during this session.